Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
This week on RealityCast, I'll be talking to Steve Trombley from Planned Parenthood Chicago Action, commenting on Roe v. Wade for men, examining whether or not you pee out of your vagina, and addressing Bill O'Reilly's lesbian fascination. But first, it was good last week to see students rallying around in support of the Prevention Through Affordable Access Act, a bill that's meant to address the rise in birth control pill prices on campus throughout the country. Through a complex bit of budget engineering, the deep discounts drug companies used to offer on pills at colleges have disappeared, driving the price of birth control pills on campus up from $3 to $5 a month to $30 to $50 a month, which is a lot of money to college kids. I've seen some hesitation out there against embracing this cause on the theory that college kids should be using condoms anyway, and the price increase might encourage that. But there's a couple of problems with that viewpoint. For one, as Lynn Harris at Broadsheet says, if we know anything about birth control, we know this: the most effective method is the one you actually use. It's good to be on the pill for backup even if you're using condoms. And for women in disease-free monogamous relationships, the pill alone is often enough protection. Yes, the stereotype is that college girls are bed-hopping, but the reality is much more mundane, and a lot of college-age women are in the right circumstances to use the pill alone, and that should be their choice. Poor Matthew DeBoyer. This 25-year-old Michigan man learned the hard way that just because you get a woman pregnant doesn't mean you get to make her have an abortion. Those Miller Lite beer ads lied to him.
But if you poke it, you own it.
I propose a you poke it, you own it man law.
Second to you poke it, you own it law.
You poke it, you own it.
DeBoyer's complaint is that his ex-girlfriend did not use her right to an abortion when she got pregnant, and now he's suing for a right to a paper abortion, which sounds like pregnancy termination through paper cut, but is really just about terminating child support. DeBoyer is part of the men's rights movement, a movement based around the strange notion that the world is secretly a feminist-run matriarchy designed to destroy men. Their evidence for this theory is pretty weak, mainly a bunch of stuff about how you can tell feminists run the world because rape and domestic violence are treated like actual crimes now. The centerpiece of the men's rights movement is the great injustice that is child support. Men's rights activists treat child support like it's a consumer rights issue, like there's something terribly unjust about writing checks to a woman you're not even having sex with. Here's a typical anti-feminist rant from a YouTube video titled, Child Support is Extortion.
If a woman gets pregnant by a guy, and she wants it and he does not, then why should he have to pay for her choice? Her getting pregnant is her. It's her body.
I'll spare you the rest of the illogic. His attempts to frame pregnancy as something that women do all by themselves alone tells you how far off into the woods these guys are. Anyway, DeBoyer, fat on this misogynist logic, has been pursuing a case in court that his lawyer nicknamed Roe v. Wade for Men. The idea is that men need a special right to relinquish financial responsibility for their children to compensate for women's right to have an abortion. What DeBoyer and his lawyers forget was there's nothing about Roe v. Wade that denies men the right to an abortion. I, for one, fully support the right of any pregnant man to terminate an unwanted pregnancy in his own body. What the men's rights activists fail to grasp is that the right to an abortion isn't some special woman-only right to engage in post-conception birth control. It's based on the assumption that all people have the basic right to control their own body and their own fertility. The sick irony is that men who whine about not getting to have abortions of their very own don't have the first clue what it's like to have your actual right to bodily autonomy threatened. Men are not being blocked by anti-choice protesters, by state laws, by federal laws, or by judgmental pharmacists from getting access to the tools they need to control their own fertility. DeBoyer's case was being thrown out for being thoroughly asinine, a ruling that was upheld recently by a federal appeals court. In the meantime, the case has been the centerpiece for men's rights activists, who would be better labeled as organized deadbeat fathers. They're trying to imply that there's herds of sperm-stealing, wallet-robbing women out there, but the reality is that most men who are trying to dodge child support were not opposed to the birth of the children in the first place. Most deadbeat dads were happy to financially support their children while still married to the mother, and only after the divorce and the cutoff from the advantages of living with the family do they get whiny. Note to deadbeat fathers, supporting your children is a responsibility, not a purchase. I'd like to welcome Steve Trombley to the program. Steve is the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Chicago Action. He recently weathered the storm that was the opening of a new Planned Parenthood in Aurora, Illinois, where anti-choicers used nuisance lawsuits to delay the opening. The branch is open and operating, and Steve's here to discuss the latest news out of Aurora. Welcome to RealityCast, Steve.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
The craziness at the Aurora Planned Parenthood has finally died down some. Are you all in the clear, or are there some obstacles in the future?
You know, there remain some outstanding issues of litigation. They actually don't involve litigation against us, but litigation by anti-choice forces against the city of Aurora for issuing our permit. We expect that we'll be in some level of skirmish around that for the next year or two. But what's most important is that while we've had that and some limited protest activity, we're open for business, and we've seen an enormous outpouring of goodwill from the community and of people coming to us for services.
Well, the clinic protesters claim that your clinic wasn't welcome in their community. What's your response to that accusation now that you're settling down?
You know, nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, you know, it's been astonishing to us because our volumes that we've seen of people coming for services at the health center has far exceeded our expectations. We're, you know, 20% ahead of where we thought we would be in terms of surgical services and 30% ahead of where we thought we would be in terms of family planning services, which I think really speaks to the incredible need in and around that community for health care. In addition to that, we get people every day who come to us from the community stopping by saying, you know, we're welcome, we're sorry there was all this ruckus. The other day somebody sent a honey-baked ham, you know, to the health center to welcome us. They send pizza, they bring flowers, they stop off to make a donation. We just have had an enormous outpouring of goodwill and support from people in the community.
A lot of the hostility aimed at the new clinic seems to come from the fact that it's so nice looking and it's state of the art. Can you detail for my audience some of the advantages and services that you're offering at this new clinic?
Certainly. This is one of the largest facilities in the country that's been built for reproductive health services. It is the most state-of-the-art facility. We invested $7.5 million in this to make just an enormous investment in making a patient-centered medical facility. We spent a year and a half of the design process. We spent, you know, three times as long to design the building as we did to actually build it, because we worked with internal and external experts to make sure that we could design our patient flow, design an enormous amount of confidentiality and privacy into the process for our patients, the ability for our patients to actually have family members escort them through the process, to be with them in recovery, things that you just don't see in similar facilities around the country.
You allow more family member access to the clinic.
Yeah, and actually just to be with patients during recovery and during the process for patients who are going through surgical services.
So what would be on the horizon for Chicago Planned Parenthood and Chicago Action?
Well, I think for us, you know what, the building of this facility was anchored in our belief that, unfortunately, in this country, abortion services are becoming regionalized. We saw that, in fact, the very first weekend we were open, there was a woman who traveled from Fargo, North Dakota, in order to come to Aurora for a procedure. So we know that we need to increase our capacity because we know that as the years go on and as the battles go on, we're going to be playing an increasingly important role for the entire region in terms of providing services. So we've built this facility, and as soon as we get all the kinks worked out and everything up and running smoothly and at full speed, we'll be looking to build more facilities.
Are you anticipating that there will be a rise in demand for the services once abortion laws get stricter around the country, or if that's a possibility?
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. We are already seeing patients that travel to us from all the surrounding states, and I think as we see judicial protections for access to abortion eroding, you're going to see states increasing the number of restrictions there, and they're placing upon women in those states, and you're going to see an increased need for travel. So we see this, you know, we believe that we have a responsibility to be a regional hub, really, of making sure that women have access to abortion services and also our everyday family planning services that we provide.
Do you feel that Illinois, the state of Illinois, is going to put any kind of similar restrictions on your ability to serve that community right there in the future, or do you feel relatively free of that kind of pressure?
You know, we do have concerns because there is a 1985 parental notification law that is on our books that had been enjoined, and their efforts now to revive that law. So that's the one restriction that we see potentially coming down the pike. Beyond that, Illinois is a solidly pro-choice state. We have a solidly pro-choice governor, and we anticipate that we're just not going to see the same level of restrictions here as you see in many of the states surrounding us in the Midwest.
One final question. Can you detail out how much of Planned Parenthood's efforts in your area are aimed at family planning?
Sure. For us, abortion services, both surgical and medical, represent less than 10% of what we do. Over 90% of what we do every day is preventing the need for abortion, providing contraceptive services, testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections, pap smears, colposcopy and cryotherapy to prevent early cervical cancer. Most of what we do is basic preventative health care.
If you'd like to read more, please visit the Aurora Planned Parenthood blog at ppaurora.blogspot.com or go to plannedparenthoodaction.org. Thanks for joining us on RealityCast, Steve.
It's great. Thanks for having me.
What would we do without Bill O'Reilly? He's the mouthpiece for all those things people usually say in private, but he's right there on TV so we can hear the hate in all its glory. On a recent episode of the show, he went into a full-on hissy fit over a lesbian couple that was voted cutest couple at their high school by their peers, and even had a yearbook page. Dr. Laura Berman came onto the show to debate O'Reilly about whether or not it's important for high schoolers to treat their gay classmates like second-class citizens. Under a gentle barrage of Dr. Berman's common sense, O'Reilly's arguments became more and more incoherent.
I believe, based upon our investigation of this Weehawken High School deal and the picture, and put up the picture again of these students, that the kids voted this couple, the cutest couple, to tweak the adults, doctor, to cause trouble, to make an issue.
The picture in question is about as mundane as it gets. It's two girls holding hands in a fairly traditional pose. But the camera keeps zooming in and out on this like it's a murder scene or some other shockingly horrible thing, which causes the viewer to suspect that O'Reilly is projecting just a little here. It's not that the kids wanted to do much else but show that they like these girls and that homosexuality is a-okay with them, but I think that the O'Reilly factor is definitely trying to provoke and get a rise out of people and make it seem daring and horrible to be accepting of gay couples. O'Reilly had a whole list of bizarre reasons that the school should have officially homophobic reactions to teenage gay couples while endorsing teenage straight relationships.
One, social. It's much more difficult to be a homosexual than a heterosexual in America.
And his proposal for fixing that problem is to make it harder to be a homosexual in America, to have schools officially treat their gay students like second-class citizens, and to encourage classmates to be intolerant. Sounds like a great plan, right next to fixing global warming with SUVs for everyone.
Two, religious. There are people who believe that kind of a lifestyle is against their religion, and they pass that on to their children.
Two, we live in a country that has official separation of church and state. If schools start discriminating against kids because of religious dogma, there's no other way to interpret that than say schools are favoring one religion over another that might not preach hatred of homosexuals. Not to say all the students that have no religion at all. Last I checked, the First Amendment was still on the books.
Three, an exposition of sexuality in a minor, and that's very important, in a minor situation is inappropriate in an academic setting.
Lest you think the girls were doing it for the camera, let me remind you that they're just smiling and posing like normal, fully clothed teenage couple, in a way that would not bother O'Reilly if they were straight. Is a gay couple holding hands exposition of sexuality in a way that a straight couple isn't? O'Reilly thinks so, for reasons that are charitably described as nonsensical.
I think private behavior belongs in private settings. Right. I don't think it belongs in a high school
yearbook.
But
you'd be okay with a cutest couple, heterosexual couple.
I would
though.
Be because that is the norm of society. See, it's the same gay marriage thing. You have a 6% option here. Homosexuals, according to research, are 6% of the population.
Get that? The rarer it is, the more sex-like it seems, through some sort of mysterious process that I can't fathom. Berman points out that, by that measure, black couples should be somehow less private and more sexy, sexed up, sexified, too sexy for public than white couples, at which point O'Reilly moves the goalposts again, saying race is not conduct. Of course, holding hands is what he's objecting to, and that's conduct, so he's basically got no point. This is all good news. Homophobes can't make a coherent argument in public, which is really beginning to work against them in the court of public opinion. Maybe the kids who voted for this lesbian couple were trying to get a rise out of people, but you know, so what? Making fools out of homophobes and publicly demonstrating opposition to homophobia is a good thing, and these kids should be applauded. What will their parents think? If their parents are worth respecting, they'll be proud of their kids.
Now listen up.
I'm going to blame Lauren, my co-blogger at Offsprung's political blog Unsprung, for drawing me into her fascination with the Tyra Banks show. It's a real muddle of good intentions and just fumbled presentation, and the recent episode about learning to love your lady parts is a good example. A sex educator named Dr. Debbie came onto the show and she had a vulva puppet to help women calm down about a body part they've had with them every day of their entire lives.
And this is what I brought with me. This is the Wondrous Vulva Puppet, which is, you know, it's a little silly because, of course, we don't really have velvet and satin and little flowers down there.
Speak for yourself. Nah, I'm just kidding. Tyra makes a good point on the show, which is that if you're honestly scared of looking at your vulva, then a soft pearl and velvet puppet might take some of the edge off. And I don't doubt that some women are still scared to look at their lady parts in this day and age, even though feminists recommended whipping out the hand mirror over 30 years ago. Still, it was a little hard to swallow the idea that very many women could be as ignorant as was hinted at here.
You've got the urethra, which is where women pee from, and that's important to know.
Dr. Debbie, so many women think that you pee and have a baby from the same hole. So many people think you...
That's right.
Oh, no. So many people think that. They really do. Mm-hmm. So it's good that you're saying that.
Absolutely. There are different parts. You don't pee from your clitoris. You don't pee from the vagina. You pee from the urethra.
You know, I believe that some women don't know that you have a separate pee hole, but you'd think it would be something you'd figured out the first time you peed with a tampon in. But I suppose shame and fear prevent basic logical deduction in all sorts of areas, so no reason to think human biology would be any different. Of course, the guests on the show are someone who's afraid to use a tampon and another who's afraid to go to the gynecologist, so I suppose the tampon pee test wasn't really an option for them. As much as the vulva puppet and the tampon coaching made me flinch, the commenters at Feministing were kind enough to supply information about how necessary this kind of education on national television really is. Commenter Claire said, I went to a private college in the Midwest where some women were vehemently opposed to learning about their own anatomy because it seemed gross or too much like masturbation. To which I say, maybe they should learn masturbation is cool too. God knows men don't need a velvet-lined penis puppet shown to them to encourage them to masturbate. Commenter E.G. said, I went to a feminist women's college and in sophomore year, one of my roommates revealed that she thought women peed out of our clits. So yeah, sadly, this is necessary. To which I'll add that now that kids are filing into colleges that have largely been exposed to the abstinence-only boondoggle, these kinds of dangerous misconceptions about basic facts are going to be more, not less, common. I suppose learning that you have three distinct holes down there is pretty traumatizing for some women, like you're just full of holes. I'm reminded of that Margaret Cho joke where she said that she sometimes feels like a power strip. And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts. If you haven't heard any of the plethora of fetus singing songs out there, you're probably luckier for it. But it's a real phenomenon, these anti-choice protest songs that involve grown men singing as if they were fetuses berating their own mother. Here's a recent example plucked off YouTube.
Mommy, don't do that.
this genre surged into the MTV mainstream a couple of years ago with Nick Cannon's nauseatingly dreadful song, Can I Live? That was roughly the same kind of thing, but with more expensive production values.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.